Hello, welcome to The Musics in Japan,
a conversational podcast about daily life for an American couple living long-term in Japan.
So lately I've been thinking about the differences of being part of the LGBTQIA+ community in the United States versus in Japan.
Well, there's only one of them.
Yeah. But it's made up of 200 islands.
Yeah?
Yeah. Japan is made up of 200 islands.
I didn't know it was so many.
Yeah, there's... Okay, now I'm not sure. Oh, man, we don't Google stuff on this show, so go ahead and... But we're coming out the gate with go ahead, fact check me, hit us up on social media, tell me if I'm wrong, I don't know. But in my reality, Japan's made up of 200 islands.
The people might like something to do. I know there are a lot of islands.
Yeah, and I know, you know, our peeps... Everybody who's part of the music fam, and I consider everybody who listens part of the music fam, they do like to send us tweets about things I've gotten wrong or things more often in my reality you've gotten wrong.
So feel free to send us tweets about things we've gotten right, too.
Yeah, no, we love the positive reinforcement on Twitter. But I'm really, like, super happy with our Twitter life. They're super supportive, which check out this... circling back around.
Okay.
And really I feel like we have a large following that are part of the LGBTQIA+ community at large globally.
Yeah, I feel like we do too.
So for me, the difference, like for me, being part of the community was a political act in the United States more so than it's a political act here in Japan. And I think that has to do with the time of year that it happens. So like in the United States, although I didn't really march right before we decided to move. I think I had stopped marching. I think since you and I got married, I stopped marching. But I used to go, prior to our marriage, I used to go every year to Gay Pride and Live It Up in San Francisco. And here in Japan, I don't do any of that stuff for two reasons. One, the Japanese summer is brutal and I'm sick. For 62 days from the beginning of July to the end of August, I'm like just crawling through the days trying to survive because of my lupus and HCP. And because I just don't feel, and this might be because of the language or what have you, but I just don't feel like there is an LGBTQIA+ struggle here in Japan. It doesn't feel like they're fighting for rights.
No, it's definitely because of the language.
Okay.
Because I've had coworkers, I had a gay coworker who definitely like was part of the struggle for rights. It just takes a different form in Japan. Like the, you know, kind of San Francisco Pride Parade thing of making a lot of noise, while they happen here, are more about community celebration than political advancement. And I think that's true now for the Pride Parades in the U.S., is that often they're just for community celebration and not aimed at advancing political agendas.
And that's where you're wrong. So both pride parades in the United States and here in Japan are marches for rights. And so they are marches. They're like there's a parade and celebration connected
right
to the march. And so some people march and some people just do the parade. And in the United States, they've combined the march with the parade, but the march is a public statement and is very, very political.
Well, I know it's a public statement of look how many people we are and look how much support we have.
But it's also marching for rights.
Okay.
For advancements of rights. Because in the United States, there's still something, I think something like 48 states that you can still be fired in.
But I think it's down to 27 was last
time. 27?
Yes.
I know it's still legal in some states where you can get fired for being gay.
Yes.
I don't think you'd be fired for being gay in Japan, but I know that Japan doesn't have a marriage equality.
Well, if you're a regular employee, it's really hard to get fired. You have a lot of protections. And if you're not, they can fire you for basically anything. So I'm not sure the employment situation is analogous.
If you're a contract employee... I know contract employees, being a therapist, I know contract employees that have shown up to work drunk because I work with people who have substance abuse issues. Some of my clients do. And they show up to work drunk and they can't be fired because you have to prove that they have done the thing that you said they've done if they have a contract. And you have to go through steps There's, you have to have a casual conversation, a formal conversation that's documented. And then there's like one or two write-ups, and then you can warn them that you're going to fire them, and then you can terminate them. The most popular way is to force people out through negative treatment.
Yeah.
And so basically you just start bullying someone you want to fire.
Yeah.
And trying to make them quit.
So I think that what I meant was that it's really hard to fire somebody within the terms of their employment. So for regular employees, that's basically a lifetime. It's really hard to fire somebody. Contract employees, it's hard to fire them mid-contract. It's really easy to not renew.
Yeah, because you don't need cause. You can just say, we're not renewing you.
Right. So I think that as far as legal recognition, in Japan, the struggle is for marriage recognition more so than for labor recognition, because there's already pretty strong labor laws in place. And there's a lot of abuse within the labor system that's kind of beyond the scope of this topic.
And so I think something too that's that is a significant difference that impacts my impression is that Japan is not a physical contact country. So there's not, like, you see couples, some couples now in the modern era are holding hands, but in terms of like women holding hands, that could be friendship.
Yeah.
So I had a girlfriend a few years back, that just a female friend, not a romantic friend. And her favorite thing was to hold me by my waist or link arms and arms, mm-hmm. and whisper really close, and sometimes just randomly kiss me. Heterosexual woman. And that was just her affection behavior. And so I think in Nagoya, there's such a blend from different countries.
Right.
Like, I had another Japanese girlfriend that... So I guess I shouldn't say Japan is not a physical country, because here I am talking about all the physicality.
Yes.
Traditionally, it wasn't a physical country, so because you bow. But my female friends are quite physical with me in terms of, like, rubbing my arm or, like, so I would not be able to tell. And you see, like, young boys touching each other on the train.
Yes.
All the time. And younger men touching themselves all the time. And then it's really common for, because male makeup lines are huge here in Japan, which I think is a ripoff. But it's interesting because it's the reverse of the pink tax. The male makeup costs twice as much as female makeup. Uh-huh. So I'm like, yay. So the pink tax is whenever they make something more expensive for women than they do for men. And in the United States, it's really common that women like shampoo, conditioner, deodorant, all of those types of things are more expensive for women than for men.
Well, that also includes things like the euphemistic feminine hygiene products that men don't have to buy, that cis men don't have to buy.
And healthcare.
Right. So, yeah, that's all part of that. I think that, yeah, the makeup is interesting. I wonder if the theory is that the men who are more likely to work can afford it more easily.
I don't know. And that's the thing of like being outside the culture a bit, right?
Or if they're just assumed to not know what they should be paying for makeup.
And so I think that could be it too. Like, they don't know how much the stuff is supposed to cost. Or maybe because it's patriarchy, maybe they think it's higher quality than the women's makeup.
Maybe.
But it's the exact same product, just in different packaging. I can tell you, it's the exact same product. So guys out there, if you're paying more, just go in the women's section. And like, seriously, it's same makeup. Shiseido for men and Shiseido for women, same makeup.
So I wonder too,
calling them out.
How much
expose?
How much is the Japanese, for lack of a better term, gay coded stuff, is not the same as American gay coded things?
What do you think is gay coded? See, that's just it. I don't think that Japan has as many gay-coded stuff. Because, so, and here's the other thing. Pink is a masculine color. Like, seeing a man dressed from head to toe in... So, okay, for me, the most, like, one of the most, air quote, butch looks in Japan is so effeminate to me. The, like, auburn hair, curled and shellacked, full face of makeup, pumps. Well, they're men's shoes with the high heel. And colorful clothing with tons of jewelry. For me, that reads as effeminate.
Right, and that's what I'm saying, is that what's regarded as gay, what you could say, oh, they're gay based on the coding, which I know that you can't tell because I was perceived
as... let's just be clear that being effeminate is not the same as being gay. So we're talking about how people label things that are air quote straight and how people label things that are air quote gay.
Correct.
And so for me, I don't think that an effeminate man is a gay man. But I'm saying for me, I don't understand what's supposed to be like butch or femme,
right,
culturally for men or for women in Japan. Like, I don't get it. So like for me in the United States, I would be considered now to be dressing as what air quotes would be considered butch, because I wear the same thing every day. I wear jeans, a tank top, and a button-down shirt every single day, and tennis shoes. And I don't wear makeup, and my hair is in a bun. For some cultures, that would be considered butch, although I consider myself femme. And that has more to do with not sexual preferences, because I'm not a lazy bottom. And I shouldn't say that all femmes are a lazy bottom. Ooh, bias came out on that, right?
Just leapt out.
Yeah, right? Well, no, because people would just assume, because when I was younger, I was hyper, what people consider to be hyper femme, super femme, which is so stupid and lame, because I always was completely dolled up. And they just assumed that I was a lazy bottom. And I feel like you can be butch and a lazy bottom. Mm-hmm. Being femme tells you nothing about what I prefer to do in the bedroom.
Yes.
Like, my clothing and attire tells you nothing about what my sex is like.
Right. So I think to the extent that it can, that's just
self-reinforcing. So to be clear, it wasn't a bias, it was defensiveness.
Okay.
Like, I don't think that femme women are naturally considered lazy, and I don't think that bottoms are lazy. I think there can be lazy tops and lazy bottoms. I think there are some people who, for what I would think of, enjoy lazy sex. And I don't think lazy sex is a bad thing. Okay. I think if that's your preference, I don't think lazy sex should be demonized.
Now, if you have a giant lazy Susan and you have sex on that, is that lazy Susan sex?
It would be, yes.
Okay.
So some people enjoy lazy sex. I think we just need to stop. Like, so here's just a rant for me, something that just totally gets under my skin. I hate when people kink shame. Mm-hmm. And I hate when people label shame.
Yeah.
So I don't think that you can determine what lazy sex is for someone and whether that's a positive or a negative thing. Because I have had what I would consider to be lazy sex, and it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it with you, in fact. Yep. Outing you out as sometimes enjoying lazy sex.
Yep.
Sorry to out you like that. But what we consider to be lazy sex for us.
Yeah, I'll deal with being outed like that.
I feel like we need to get out of people's bedrooms.
Yeah,
we need to stop kink shaming. We need to stop identity shaming. We need to stop shame. Like, shame is just such a toxic, useless, and stupid emotion. And it's like stupid energy. So there are things that I have shame about. And I'm working through it because I think shame and guilt are just toxic. But I don't have the energy to be shaming people based on what they do. And if they're your sexual partner, don't shame them. Talk to them.
Okay. So what I was saying earlier.
What were you saying earlier? I went on a rant.
Yeah.
That wasn't a digression. That was a rant.
Yeah. About gay coding is that from the time that I was a teenager until my early 20s.
Which is a form of shaming.
Yes. Most people assumed that I was gay. Because
even after we got married, people assumed you were gay. Yes,
because if you listen to podcasts, you can tell I have a lisp. But that's due to dental work.
No, no. It's the way you move. Okay. You don't have a lisp.
I think I do. Okay. And the way I move is due to pain.
The way you move is also due to autism.
Okay, yes, pain and autism. So the way I move, people just make assumptions. What I'm saying is that...
Because you're what would classically be called a dandy boy.
Yes. So what I'm saying, and this, you're like feeding exactly into what I wanted to say.
Right.
Is that we don't know what that looks like here in Japan as foreigners, because one of the biggest companies for men to get aesthetic work done is called Dandy House.
Yes. So, which is why I say it.
Yeah.
Because you're not a dandy boy so much anymore. I think the beard
has,
because it used to be very coifed, air quotes coifed.
Yeah, there's no tea in that, but yeah.
Say it then.
Quaffed.
I like quaffed.
Yeah.
I'm going to continue saying quaffed.
Quaffed rhymes with wafted, like.
Which has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
So I'm hearing it's got that the same relation between quaffed and just, the
spelling.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's going to be fun for you to transcribe. Kisper and Chad overlapping conversation.
Yeah.
So I know I keep talking over you today. I'm sorry. I'm being rude.
No, that's fine. I think on this topic, you should be talking over me because although I have been perceived as being gay, I'm not gay, so I'm not part of that community.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic and supportive of the aims of that community. I will speak up for people in that community. I don't tolerate, like, criticism of that community as a community. You can criticize people within that community for things they do, but, like, saying that, you know, the LGBTQ community, this or that, I think you shouldn't speak on that because it's not a monolith.
Like, no, it's not.
Like all other communities.
Correct. So for me, when I call you, when I say I used to be a dandy, or when I say a lot of the stuff I say is, and I know I shouldn't do it when I'm speaking publicly, but it's with in-group joking that I've done with my peeps and that I do with you, but it's not appropriate to assign people's sexual roles based on their physical appearance. I hope that's the message everyone heard, because that's the message I'm trying to promote, is that you cannot look at any one person and assume that they're 31 flavors or assume that they're vanilla.
Right.
And there is more than one type of vanilla. So I feel like we need to stop trying to determine what people's sex lives are based on appearance. I think that that is disgusting and rude and foul and bigoted. I think it's bigotry to look at somebody and think, at the very least, it's bias.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say that I hear a lot, like, don't assume that just because, you know, a man is, like, strong and talks in a deep voice and all of that, that he's straight. And I would go the other way and say...
And don't assume he's a top.
Good point, yeah.
And don't assume he's a dom.
No, I've heard a lot of disappointment from people I know on that regard, so...
What are you talking about? Who is coming to you and saying, wow, I thought so-and-so was going to be a dominant top, and it turns out they were a bottom, and I am just bitter about that. Who is coming to you with these stories?
Well, nobody lately.
Who? When?
Before we were married.
Okay, one time.
No, more than once. When I was working at The Well, which was like 1997, 98, about half the people there were part of the LGBTQ community, and so conversation at work would be like that.
Okay. So now expressing sexual disappointment because you made assumptions, that's on you for assuming.
Okay.
Don't assume.
Because you know what happens when you assume. You're often wrong.
Yeah. Like, no, nobody's making an ass out of me because they assume something. That's not happening. So I find that in Japan, I am self-identified because I'm out, and right. I tell my clients, most of my clients, there's a handful of clients that don't listen to the podcast and don't actually know that I'm part of the LGBTQIA plus community.
Don't listen to the podcast. Don't pay attention to tweets. Like, pay attention to nothing except for your therapy website, which does not contain a ton of information about you.
Right. And so it's really, really hard for me. My business is not. So I don't accept every client.
Right.
And I would like to one day be in a place where I don't accept clients who are not working to actively stop being biased against the community. Mm-hmm. I'm almost there financially, but there is a financial reality for me anyway, to where I have to work with people who say bigoted things, and then I try and educate them.
Right.
About the community. And so for me, that's a tough spot to be in. And in the United States, there was, like, the community was large enough that I could just not work with people who were biased and bigoted against various aspects of my identity.
Right.
And I'm finding now that I'm not able to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's been really hard for me, because in the United States, I had a hard line. And that was, now as I'm wondering, like, is it better? Because So I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Is it better to talk to people who have bias and bigots, who you might have bigotry and biasm in their lexicon? I kind of go back and forth on, should I cut these people from my life or should I use it to educate them? And so once somebody expresses a bias, an active bias against it, I do identify to let them know that they are coming into contact with somebody who is pansexual and what that means. And I find that they always write it off because I'm married to you.
Yeah, I had somebody say to me a while ago, well, I mean, I know that Christopher is pansexual, but now that you're a straight couple, it's like, well, no, but we're not, because Christopher's still pansexual.
Yeah, I'm still pan.
Yeah.
Like, I still think boobies are like the best thing ever, and that's never going to change.
Shared interest.
We both enjoy vagina.
Yes. Yes, we do.
And so I feel like, you know, I don't partake of everything I enjoy in the world all of the time. And we are currently in a monogamous relationship.
Well, I think it would be silly, because we are in a monogamous relationship, to worry about the fact that you find, you know, women and non-binary people and agender people attractive.
Yeah.
Because if you were straight, you would still find men attractive. Why wouldn't I be worried about all the men? Like, how does it, you know, relate? And I know some people feel like, well, I've been told, they feel like they have to be having sex with multiple people to get their needs met because of their gender preferences in terms of partner.
Yeah.
And I think, well, then don't be monogamous.
Yeah, because for me, being pansexual, the reason I'm not demisexual, because a lot of people want me to identify as demisexual, but no, I don't have to know you to have sex with you. I love a good casual one-night stand. I don't even know your name. Mm-hmm. Oh, baby. In the day, that was my jam. Not anymore, because I know your name.
Yeah.
And now I jokingly call myself Chadsexual because I get all my sex from, hello, Chad.
Yeah, which makes me nervous when, okay, thank you.
The Chad.
Yes. Specific one.
Yeah. It's a very specific Chad. So for me, the reason why I identify as pansexual is because I'm not attracted to gender. I'm attracted to people.
Yeah.
And so when we say, I think it's interesting that you don't say trans. You say non-binary. What was your thing? Like, because I also find trans.
Men, women, non-binary, and agender.
Yeah. And also trans folk.
Yeah. But trans folk, typically, I don't know any exceptions personally, but you may view themselves as men, trans men, or women, trans women, or non-binary, trans non-binary. So I do
know that there is part of the trans people that I know, part of the trans community that really value trans being, the word trans being part of their identity.
Okay.
And so for me, I don't care how anyone identifies. I like all humans sexually.
Yes.
I feel like that's the easiest way to say it, and really all humans within what I find attractive. And sometimes I have sex, not anymore because I find you physically attractive, but I used to have sex with people I didn't even find physically attractive. Mm-hmm. Just like if I thought they might be interesting sexually. Like I was like, I wonder what it'd be like to have sex with you. And then I would have sex with them.
So like the sexual equivalent of eating durian fruit.
Eating what?
Durian fruit.
What is that?
That's that really stinky fruit that's supposed to taste good.
I have no idea what this fruit is. I've never heard of it.
Okay, you should look it up. It's got like a really, really
awful... Is it that like vomit fruit?
Yeah.
Because I've heard of something called vomit fruit.
Yeah, basically. That's the same one. It's got just a really, really awful smell. But some people, just the taste of it, they say it's delicious.
See, no, I didn't ever have sex with stinky people. Because I have a really sensitive nose. Like, I'm really sensitive to smell.
I wasn't saying stinky people. I'm saying people that two of your senses disagree about. Your visual sense says this person is not sexually attractive, but your intellectual sense says that could be really interesting and fun.
Okay, yeah. But nobody that I felt was stinky. And stinky could be too much cologne, too much perfume.
Yeah.
And some people have a really, really great smelling body odor, which is supposed to be one of the ways you can tell if someone's in love with you, which I think is stupid because I have nothing to do with anything. Although I love your BO.
Okay, but...
on most days. There are some days I'm like, that's not the right note.
But if it's supposed to be the basis for attraction, why are they called pheromones rather than love-a-mones?
And you know they're not called pheromones. You know that.
I don't know that.
You do know that.
Educate me.
Pheromones.
Pheromones? That's not fair.
I knew it. And I shouldn't be laughing. I should not be laughing.
But you are.
No, I'm not. I'm smiling deeply because I love you.
Okay. Yes.
That's I'm fine. Laughing in shame.
Don't laugh, shame her, folks.
That is so true. So something that has bothered me is that, without going into specifics, over the years, I have had clients try and convince me that bisexuality is a mental illness. Mm-hmm. That chaps my hide. That roasts my Wheaties, man.
Yeah.
Roast my weenies. But it bothers me because sexuality is not mental illness.
Right.
Sexuality is sexuality. Even if I don't agree with the sexuality, I'm going to say something really, really controversial. Pedophilia is not a mental illness. It is a type of sexuality, but because it harms children and because children cannot consent, if you engage in pedophilia, you are a rapist and you are wrong. You should suppress your sexuality, or you should find someone who's willing to little, which is somebody acting in a regressed or childish way.
An adult doing so, yes.
Yeah, an adult who can consent. Children cannot consent. So for me, sexuality is all about consent. And I know there is a type of sex that is consensual non-consent, and that is completely okay. You start with consent and you set what the non-consent rules are, and then you do it. Pedophilia has nothing, I cannot say this strong enough, nothing to do with being LGBTQIA+.
Yes.
Nothing at all. These are two separate and distinct groups, two separate and distinct types of sexuality. And so for me, I know it's really controversial to say that pedophilia is a type of sexuality, but pedophilia is the attraction to and is age-based attraction. Mm-hmm. I do not think you have to act on attraction. And so that goes back to me being pansexual. There are people I'm attracted to. I don't act on attraction because I'm monogamous. I think there are rules to keep the world safe and rules to respect your partner and rules to respect yourself. And for me, that goes to respecting children. And anyone who's followed our Twitter feed knows that I am a sexual assault survivor and I am a survivor of pedophilia. And so for me, I feel very strongly that if you engage in pedophilia, you are damaging someone for the rest of their life. It's not okay. They're damaged for the rest of their life. And I can say that all of my gay sex didn't damage me. All of my pansex hasn't damaged me. All of my consensual sex has not damaged me. Pedophilia has damaged me. So for me, that's how I have like this really clear understanding of what is damaging and what is not sexually. And I have not known anyone in the community. I have never met anyone in the community that was a pedophile. Ever. None. So I don't care what your gender. Once it's pedophilia, once it is attraction to children, I don't care if you're attracted to boys or girls. I don't care what your gender are. That's pedophilia and that is wrong. It hurts children. It damages people for life.
I would agree. I'm also a survivor of that. And I don't talk about much, but I have said before. But yeah, I think that it's different when you're talking about adults. And I think it's also different when you're talking about people on the verge of adulthood exploring their sexuality together.
Yeah.
And an adult taking advantage of somebody who is like a teenage age. So I think that...
Well, and pedophilia can happen in the teenage years.
Right.
And so I think it's really important that for me, two teenagers consenting to explore sexuality together, guys, wait for sex. I think there are some ages that it's too young. Mm-hmm. Like because of my history at 9 years old, I was making out with other 9-year-olds.
Right.
And that's way too young to be making out.
Yeah.
Like, our son at 9 hadn't been kissed, and I just see the beauty in him waiting, and I see just how much healthier his views on sex are with waiting. And I don't know. I feel like teenage years, like, but this is me saying my opinion, but I feel like waiting until you're well in your teens.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Just for maturity reasons and, you know, and also because then you can have birth control and always wear a condom, practice safe sex. You know, HIV is still out there. AIDS, HIV is still out there. Herpes still out there. Gonorrhea is still out there. STDs are real, y'all.
Yes, they are.
Practice safe sex. And I also think PrEP, like if you're going to, and I know a lot of people are like, well, you shouldn't have to do PrEP and all this, that, and the other. But if you're going to be sexually active and you're just going to like have a lot of sex, like if you want to engage in just tons of sex, get on PrEP, man.
Well, in the U.S. it's
PrEP and condoms.
In the U.S. it's still $20,000 a year.
To be on PrEP?
Yeah.
And are you shitting me?
No. And insurance may or may not cover that depending on what kind of insurance you have.
That's disgusting. That's disgusting. They should pass out PrEP like condoms to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like it's preventative care.
Yes.
Like, that's a smart move. Sorry if you can hear me resting my blanket. But it's super hot. I'm taking my blanket on and off. I can't, like, I'm having problems with temperature regulation today.
Oh, my poor honey.
Yeah, poor Christopher.
Yeah.
She can't regulate her temperature.
Send ice. Not immigration. We live in Japan. That's a different thing.
I mean, permanent residents. We're legal.
Frozen water.
So something else that's really important to me is the issue of trans bathrooms. So something really cool about Japan is Japan does have gender-neutral bathrooms. Not everywhere, but a lot of places. Like my favorite tempura restaurant chains has a, it's interesting to me, I love this, a positive gender bias for me. They have a male-female bathroom and a female-only bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
Well, and it makes sense. Like, when we would go to the Raiders games, the men's bathrooms were never as busy as the women's.
Yeah.
Because of the difference in the typical anatomy, men could just go in and pee in the trough next to, you know, 20, 30 other men and skedaddle.
Yeah, shake it and go.
Yeah. And then for women, it was the sit-down toilets.
Yeah.
So every time that issue was studied.
So I appreciate the squat toilets in Japan are no joke, which we've talked about previously. Yeah.
But every time it's been studied, which I'm a math person, so I've read some of these studies. They say,
have you?
Yes. There should be more sit-down toilets than there are urinals. And so if you're going to divide it up into men and women, you should have more bathrooms for women. I am a big fan of provide single stalls that you can't peek through, you can't look under, so that it's the issue is irrelevant. And but you're right, Japan does have a lot of gender-neutral bathrooms. A lot of establishments will have single-stall bathrooms. So,
yeah.
So the issue is moot. And a lot of train stations and things have larger bathrooms that are for accessibility, but also for families and that kind of thing. So,
and I feel like in the U.S. and the whole world needs to get over itself. Like, non-gender-based bathrooms are the way to go. And I think that people should be able to go into the bathroom, however they whatever their identity says.
Yeah.
That's the bathroom they should use. And so what I think people don't know is that sexual assault happens in bathrooms now.
Yes.
It's happening in bathrooms now. So having that women's symbol on the back of the bathroom is not keeping anybody safe.
It is not a force field.
It's not. And I feel like barring trans folks from using a bathroom that matches their identity so that they have one less moment of dysphoria in their day is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And to me, having that's just like a basic human right, the ability to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I would agree.
And not experience dysphoria when you go to the bathroom. And also, it is safer for folks who are trans to go into the bathroom in which they identify as. In my mind, it's safer because of the bias and bigotry and all of the harm and physical abuse that happen to trans folks. So I'm really pro bathroom rights.
Yeah, me too. And I think too that one thing that happens when you stop policing, which bathroom people go into, is that it makes people who aren't trans safer as well. Like there's literally no downsides to it in my mind.
Because if the line's longer in one bathroom, go to the other.
Yeah.
Because I know that I was younger, I would go in a men's bathroom with no qualms. Like I was really a very bold person. And now I'm like, wow, that was not very safe or smart, Christopher. Mm-hmm. But I didn't care. And I would have men like curse me out and like tell me, what are you doing? You shouldn't be in here. And I'm like, I have to pee.
So what made it not safe or smart?
Because of the bias of me being in that bathroom and people being furious that I was in that bathroom. Like, how dare I go in their bathroom?
So feeling like they had the right to attack you.
Yes. Based on what bathroom I went into.
Yeah. So I don't think there's anything inherently more dangerous about men's bathrooms, except that, like, if men get like, well, you're in here, so now you're fair game for whatever.
Yeah.
That attitude is poisonous and should be.
Which supports the argument of why trans women should be using the women's bathroom.
Yes.
So that they don't have to deal with that aggression. Because I can say from my own experience that men get hostile AF, man, when you go in their bathroom and you're female presenting. And I don't care if you're not female presenting, what society considers to be female presenting. If you identify as a woman, you should be able to use the woman's bathroom. If you identify as a man, you should be able to use the men's bathroom.
Well, and I'm just thinking about our friend who's cis female but a bodybuilder. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm fat, but she could pick me up and bench press me pretty easily.
Yes, and she is what the world would consider to be male presenting.
Right. But she's a female. She identifies as female. She's cis female. Like,
yeah.
She should be able to go use the women's bathroom if you're going to split up into men and women. I personally
agree. Gender is a social construct anyways.
Yes. So people, I was reading a thing from the WHO. That said,
what's
that
the WHO?
The World Health Organization.
Thank you.
That said that most people assume that they're a 46XX or 46XY person, meaning they have 46 chromosome pairs and their sex chromosomes are XX or XY.
Okay. I had no idea what you were on about. I thought you were talking about sizes. And I'm like, a 46XX, that's big. That's like, why are most people are not that big? And I was thinking, maybe he's going to make a point about big people.
No, that's a different thing. But it's saying that...
That's a difference. That's a different something?
Yeah, that's a different something.
Okay.
But it's saying that most people assume that they're one of these things, but about, it said several per thousand people are not either one. And only some of those people present as intersex. So only some of those people have ambiguous genitalia or notable characteristics. So it's said that there are, you know, quite a few men who are 46X. They don't have a Y chromosome, but their body develops in a masculine way. That there are women who are 46XY. That is, if you tested their genetics, like looking for bar bodies and all that kind of thing, it would say it's a man, but their body developed as a woman because the sex chromosomes are more complicated than we think. And so while the majority of people are like genotypically female or male and their body matches it, even if we just want to say, but science, because that's the argument I hear most, is like that trans people are against science because biology assigned you one or the other.
Which is bigoted bullshit.
It is, but science doesn't support it either.
Yeah.
So you can't leave out, you know, a sizable part of the population and say, no, we're only counting the people who are 46XX or 46XY.
And so dropping the science on my gender is a social construct.
Thank you. And most people don't know.
Like, yeah, most people don't know the science behind gender.
But most people don't even know their own gender for sure.
That's a good one. Like, if we're really going hard on this is what defines gender and science supports gender.
Right. I'm not sure that I'm 40.
You have to get a specific gender test done.
Exactly.
You have to get a scientific test done.
You have to get a genetic test done because...
And that's eugenics. That leads to eugenics.
Yeah. So I don't know for sure that I'm 46XY.
Yeah. I identify as a cisgendered woman, but
yeah, I identify as a cisgendered man, but I don't know if I'm 46XY. I know you identify as a cisgendered woman and you've given birth, but that doesn't mean you're necessarily 46XX.
Correct. So our point is, so I want everybody to know that I am a cisgendered woman and that these are only my opinions, that I'm only one member of the LGBTQIA plus community. And so my views on pansexuality, my views on what it means to be trans and all of that are seen through my lens. And I want to be really clear what my lens is. And I hope that all of the trans folks who hear this, because know that I am coming from a place of love, and I am aware that I may have said something that was ignorant and I may have inadvertently hurt someone. And if I did, I'm sorry. And please let me know. Let me know and educate me, but please come with love, because know that I'm coming with love and I'm trying to support a movement and I'm trying to get rights for trans children, because I do believe that children do know how they identify. And I do think, because for me, I remember being very young, feeling like a little girl. Mm-hmm. I remember my earliest memories are feeling like a girl, believing I was a girl. And I feel very fortunate and very lucky that the cards just played out, that the rest of the world accepted that for me.
Yeah.
And that's my point, is that the rest of the world, based on the way my genitalia was formed, and that's it, just based on my genitalia, yeah, allowed me to say my own truth. And I think we need to start letting kids say their truth and letting kids live their truth and letting kids go to the bathroom as their truth. I think this argument that a 5-year-old trans child should have to go to some particular restroom based on their particular, what as adults are assuming their genitalia to be,
right?
Because they haven't looked at these kids' genitalia, at least I hope they haven't, based on that being discriminated against, I think is wrong. And it breaks my heart to hear these stories of kids that are like not able to go to the bathroom during the school day, mm-hmm, or have a special bathroom, and sometimes that bathroom gets locked, and that is such like a heated debate, because I don't see what the big deal is. I don't see what would happen to, because we have a son. I don't think if a trans boy who was going, if he went to kindergarten, there was a trans boy in his kindergarten class, I would completely support them being able to use the boy bathroom, the boy's bathroom. And if we'd had a daughter and there was a trans girl in her class, I would completely support that trans child being able to use the bathroom. Because I'm like, are you kidding me now that we're worried about what 5, 6, and 7-year-olds are doing in the bathroom?
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm just better at not looking at other people, but I don't think that I've ever seen anybody else's genitalia in a toileting situation.
Yeah, I haven't. Now, yes, I'll admit I have had sex in bathrooms and that was different.
That's but why I didn't then, say in a bathroom.
Because, but even then, I didn't actually see their genitalia.
Interesting. That's why I was saying in a toileting situation, because like when I was in junior high, they had locker communal showers. So that was different. I'm not a big fan of communal showers. I think you should have separate shower stalls for everybody.
Yeah, I do too.
So, but, you know, I agree. So I think that goes back to your point about, like, do we try to convince bigots or do we just kind of shut them out? And I think if somebody is ignorant and you feel like you have the time and the energy, then maybe trying to educate them as good, but I don't think that anybody owes their time to educate.
Oh, here's something about Japan LGBTQIA plus that chaps my hide. Okay. Something that does need to change politically. Something that maybe I should start marching again.
Okay.
Trans rights in Japan. For Japan, before you can change your gender on your passport, you have to be sterilized. And that is so offensive to me.
Yes.
That is disgusting, and I am completely against the sterilization of trans folks.
I agree, and the fact that it matches...
It's heartbreaking. It upsets me.
The fact that it matches what many other countries do is not an excuse.
Yeah, it's completely wrong. I don't think that anyone should be sterilized to have their passport match their identity. And so in Japan, you can identify, but you cannot have it changed on any of your paperwork until you're sterilized. And so that's something that's heartbreaking for me. That's something that Japan really gets wrong, mm-hmm, because sterilization is wrong. And being a woman of color, I know for many, many years, and being someone who's mixed race, I know for many, many years, it was common practice to sterilize mixed race individuals so that we wouldn't produce other mixed race children, and that there has been sterilization of women of color historically in the United States to reduce minority populations.
I know California just settled a case of that happened in 2006, so it's not some distant historical relic.
Yeah. So for me, sterilization hits a nerve that is really raw and sensitive. But even if it wasn't part of my own history, I think sterilizing people is disgusting.
Yeah.
And
unless they want it.
Yeah, unless they want to be sterilized, then, you know, get sterilized. But that's different than sterilizing people.
It is.
Because you've been sterilized by choice. You had a vasectomy. Yes. And that was by choice. And so I don't view that as you were sterilized. I view that you got a vasectomy.
Okay.
And that's very different. And so I believe that trans folks are just folks.
Yeah.
And they should have all the rights that cisgendered folks have. And I think LGBTQIA plus folks are just folks. And they should have all the rights that heterosexual folks have. Because I think all of these rights are human rights. The right to get married to me should, or not get married, it should be a personal choice that everybody gets to make. And I think the right to have children or not have children should be a personal choice and personal human right that everybody gets to make. And going to the bathroom, geez Louise, can we just let folks go to the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a thing about the bathroom. So I'm like completely toilet obsessed, because I have frequent urination because of some surgeries I've had. I have a really super sensitive bladder. And so for me, I just imagine what would it be like to never be able to go into a bathroom of my choosing, because in Japan, I know all of the areas that have squat toilets and Western toilets.
Yeah.
And I just think of it being the equivalent of having to use a squat toilet for the rest of my life, having to be physically uncomfortable every time I need to urinate. I just couldn't do it. It would be so hard. It would limit how I live life. It would limit like where I could go and how long I could be out and all of those things. And having to get up in the morning and have that on your head on top of everything else we deal with on a daily basis is just ludicrous to me.
Or just having somebody scream, "You don't belong," every time you headed into a bathroom.
Yeah, it's like, who needs that?
Nobody
needs that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Nope.
Like, knock it off. Grow up. Be an adult. It's really how I feel about it. I really feel like, grow up. Go get your life. Like, stop worrying about what everybody's doing and start living your life.
Yes.
You know, people are people. Let's all embrace our humanity kind of thing. So today we didn't really digress that much.
No. No. I think it helps to have a pretty broad topic.
But I think that, yeah, it did. And I think we did start off with kind of a digression, but I can't remember what that is.
Yeah, that was your fault. I don't remember what it was either.
That was what?
That was your fault. I don't remember what it was. Oh, the number of islands in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I really wonder, like, are there... I'm going to... You know what? We don't Google on this show, but I think I am going to Google and find out how many islands is Japan made up from. And again, if we've gotten anything wrong and we've talked about something that you identify as, please send us a loving correction. And I say please correct with love, because I am talking from a place of love. And so on that note, love yourself, love everybody in your life, live a life full of love, let go of bigotry, evolve.
Yep.
That's it. That's us.
We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. You can keep the conversation going on our website at themusicsinjapan.com. That's the music spelled M-U-S-I-C-K-S. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at The Musics on both.
And if you'd like to support us, please visit our website to sign up for our newsletter, join a Patreon tier, or send us a one-time donation through PayPal or Ko-fi. We hope you'll listen again next week.
Bye.